What's the haps, people? Good afternoon. It is your boy, Sam Pioppo, Second City Sam. And guess what? It's the return. It is the return of Second City Sam's Hot Takes. It is episode number 38 in total. And I'm so glad to be back with you guys. It's been since October 12th, 2022, since I've done an episode of Hot Takes. And it has been a hell of a ride since then. I've gone through a lot of... emotional problems, a lot of physical problems, and a lot of that will be discussed along the lines. But I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to be talking to you guys, my fellow listeners, my fellow friends. Follow me at Second City Sam on damn near everything. Facebook, X, it's, you know, formerly Twitter, but you know. Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube. Give me a subscribe on YouTube at Second City Sam. Give me a subscribe on Spotify, Second City Sam Hot Takes, and helps expand the reach of the show. So I'd like to welcome you all in. I have a ton to talk about today. I want to talk about what's happened since 2022. I want to talk about, obviously, it's week 13 of the NFL. Lots going on. I have NFL Red Zone on in the background. I have it on mute, so none of you have to hear my voice along with Scott Hansen's awesome voice. What else? I want to talk about the college football playoff. There's so much to talk about, a lot of controversy with that. And I want to talk about the MLB hot stove that should be picking up this week. Will Shohei Ohtani land in Chicago? Cubs Sox, they seem to be going in two different ways right now. I want to discuss that. And of course, I want to talk about some Chicago Blackhawks hockey, despite right now it is the second intermission and it's 4-0 Minnesota. The Blackhawks stink, ladies and gentlemen. But there's one man that's making them watchable, and I want to discuss that guy. Along with, I should be having a good buddy of mine, Robert Barton, in to discuss some hockey. He's a lot more knowledgeable than I am in hockey these days. Keeps up with the prospects, keeps up with the rest of the NHL and the standings and whatnot. Also, I will be discussing professional wrestling with my friend Robert as well. And if you don't like wrestling, that's too damn bad. This is my show. So, before I get started, I'm going to take a quick swig of water and we're going to get her going. Drink your water, ladies and gentlemen. It's important. So what's been going on since 2022? A lot. October 2022, I was a freshly married man. And now, just about a year later, I have been married for over a year. I have had countless encounters with the depression. And I've taken different medications. I've been down and out. I've wanted to be on this show. I've wanted to do this show for quite some time, but I have this problem of getting in my own head, you know, doubting myself, doing the absolute most. A lot of it, you know, it's not my fault. A lot of it's uncontrollable thoughts, and that's why recently I decided to go see a psychiatrist and see if I can get this stuff figured out. My grandfather passed away in August, and I haven't been quite right since then. I've been, you know, these scary thoughts cross your mind, and wanted to get that figured out before anything drastic were to happen. So we went to the psychiatrist, put me on a new medication. I'm feeling a lot better, in a better headspace, and I wanted to find myself a hobby. And what better hobby than doing what I love, which is talking sports, talking wrestling, and talking, just shooting shit with friends of mine. I will be having plenty of guests on this show. I'm hoping to do a weekly, make it a weekly thing. I don't know if it'll be every Sunday, nonetheless, but I figured what better day to get back on the grind than an NFL Sunday. So that's been what's going on. So we're going to get going. Right off the bat, I want to talk about the college football playoffs. As championship weekend just wrapped up yesterday, And we're going to talk about the first, before we get into the college football playoff selections, I want to talk about what happened in yesterday's games. There were a few good ones, but there were also a few not so good ones. Oregon played Washington on Friday, and that was a hell of a game. Oregon almost came back and won. They fell just short. That probably would have gotten them into the college football playoff conversation. They lose 34-31. And that is the end of the Pac-12 as Washington wins the final Pac-12 championship. Oklahoma State versus Texas in the Big 12 championship. That was never even a game. Texas was easily the better team. It wasn't even close. Texas wins the game 49-21. SMU beat Tulane, which was a bit of a shock to me anyway. An unranked SMU team. They were 10-2. They were pretty good. Tulane had been ranked most of the year. They lose 26-14, and SMU wins the American Athletic Championship. And Georgia, Alabama, the game of the respective weekend. I thought for sure Georgia was going to win. Alabama throws a monkey wrench in the entire college football playoff conversation. Alabama wins the game 27-24 in a shocker. They outmatched Georgia most of the game. I know Georgia had some injuries with McConkey and Bowers. But nonetheless, no excuses. Alabama gets the job done again. They win the SEC championship. And Michigan shuts out Iowa 26-0 to win the Big Ten championship once again. They are now the number one team in the country and the most obvious pick for the college football playoff. And finally, the ACC championship, Florida State, without their quarterback, without their second-string quarterback, their third-string quarterback, gets it done just enough against Louisville. They win the game 16-6, take home the ACC championship. There's your championship weekend results. I did forget to mention that the MAC championship was won yesterday by Miami of Ohio. They beat Toledo, that is. So I actually watched most of that game because that was on at 11, and that was more interesting than the Oklahoma State versus Texas game. That was just never a game. Texas was always going to win that game. So now let's get into it. The college football playoff selection was yesterday, or this morning, rather. And boy, howdy, did the results get people talking or what? Number one, probably the most obvious of them all, the Michigan Wolverines. They sit at number one in the country. No shocker there. They deserve it. They win the Big Ten championship. They win most of their games convincingly. And they are number one in the country. Number two, the Washington Huskies. Michael Penix Jr. looking really, really good. No surprise there. They're undefeated. They won the Pac-12 championship. They are your number two team in the country. Here's where it starts to get interesting. Texas is number three. No shock there, I guess. I mean, could have seen them at number four, but number three, they win the Big 12 championship. They are your number three team in the country, Texas Longhorns. And number four, here we go. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be Alabama? Is it going to be Georgia? Is it going to be FSU, Florida State? It's Alabama. Now, I totally get it. I totally understand why you pick Alabama to be in this Final Four. But I have a real problem putting them over Florida State in that last spot. Florida State, a Power 5 conference, wins the conference undefeated. Matter of fact, it might be more impressive that they won without their first string. What? No, without their second string. What? But their third string quarterback. They win with. Undefeated. Tough schedule. They demolished LSU earlier in the season. They win the ACC. But according to the CFP committee, they're not good enough because their quarterback is injured. Alabama replaces them. And that is your Final Four. Number one, Michigan. Number two, Washington. Number three, Texas. Number four, Alabama. So it'll be Michigan, and it'll be Alabama at the Rose Bowl. And that'll be a fun game for sure. I'm not denying that these games are going to be good. And obviously, it'll be Washington and Texas in the Sugar Bowl. Obviously, the winners of those will play each other to be the national champions. I'll tell you what, it's a tough spot to be for that committee. I know it changes to a 12-team playoff next year, which is going to be so fun. So fun. But I just can't get over the... Pardon me there, as I had a little technical difficulty. But Michigan, I think they're going to beat Alabama. It's going to be a tough game. Here's the thing, though. I'm not going to bet against Alabama in the college football playoffs. Nick Saban, he's Nick Saban. They got in, they snuck in by the skin of their teeth. Probably shouldn't even be in there, in my opinion. It's all subjective, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama goes and wins the whole damn thing. I really, really wouldn't. I wish that my Notre Dame Fighting Irish were good enough to be in the college football playoff this year, but they were not. Tough loss to Ohio State. Tough loss to Louisville. And it just wasn't a fantastic year for the Fighting Irish. Fun year. I went to three games this year. Won all three. Had a total blast. Excuse me. But the Irish aren't in. Illinois' season is over. They don't even make a bowl game. They stink. Definitely a letdown year for them. I want to talk a little bit about Northwestern, though. The Northwestern Wildcats last year were 1-11. 1-11. And in the offseason, a coaching scandal. And so what happened? You figure Northwestern's probably going to be dead last in the Big Ten West. But that's actually furthest from the truth. Northwestern winds up going 7-5 with nobody giving them a chance in hell to even compete in the Big Ten West. They finished second in the conference. And you got to give that head coach a lot of credit. What he did with that team under all the scrutiny they were under all the you know, ahead of all the scandals and bullshit that happened there, David Braun probably deserves to keep his job next year. He did an amazing job. 7-5, I mean, it's not going to win you a Big Ten championship. It's not going to even get you in the game. But I'll tell you what, after a 1-11 season last year with Pat Fitzgerald at the helm, the coaching scandal with Pat Fitzgerald, David Braun coached his team to a 7-5 record. And I think they deserve a little bit of credit. Moving on. Keeping it with the football here, it's week 13 in the NFL. I'm watching Red Zone. There's a few really good games going on right now. We got the San Jose. Wow. New Orleans Saints are trying to make a comeback on the Detroit Lions. And I'll tell you what. So far, so good on this week 13 action. My picks are going to shit, which is a pretty common occurrence at this point. But let's take a look at the scores so far. On Thursday night, we had Cowboys defeating the Seahawks 41-35 in a thriller. Colts Titans tied at 25 apiece right now. Falcons, Jets. Falcons at 13, Jets at 8. Jets had their third safety of the season. We have the Lions and the Saints. Lions are winning against the Saints 33-28. Broncos are down on the Texans 22-17 in the fourth quarter. And we still have the 3 o'clock games coming up here in just a little bit. Also, not to mention the Cardinals and Steelers are in a delay at this point. 17-3 Cardinals lead, which is kind of a shocker. Kenny Pickett went down with an ankle. Mitch Trubisky is in to play quarterback there. And the Dolphins absolutely destroyed the Commanders 45-15. Getting into some Bears football here. They're on the bye. Thank the Lord they are on the bye. Because I'll tell you what. We stinks. And there's a lot of talk about, of course, Justin Fields. And is he going to be the guy moving forward? Is he going to be the guy to lead the Bears into the next chapter of their rebuild? A lot of people are saying no, especially because right now, as it stands, the Bears have the number one overall pick because of the trade with the Carolina Panthers last season. And I got a few comments checking in here on Facebook. We got Michael Broncala saying, "Roll Tide." Roll Tide for you, champ. Kyle says, "It's deplorable that Alabama made it." I agree, Kyle. I agree. Nicole says they just want an SEC team in. That's the only reason why. You're probably right. At the end of the day, that's not how it should be, though. And you and I both know it. Trying to bring up one more comment. And it is giving me a hard time. But nonetheless, getting back to the Bears, I would like to think Justin Fields is going to be the guy. I don't think he's gotten a fair shake. Sam, it's his third season. Yeah, I know. I get it. But here's the deal. He hasn't had a chance in hell. He's had a bogus offensive line. He's got a offensive coordinator who clearly doesn't trust him. And he's got DJ Moore as his best receiver. Cole Kmet is probably his number two best receiver. These sound like a bunch of excuses, right? He hasn't gotten it done. That's fair to say. He hasn't gotten it done. But who's to say, okay, let's put ourselves in Ryan Poles' shoes here. Ryan Poles has the number one overall pick heading into the draft in April. You take Caleb Williams. You trade Justin Fields. Who's to say Caleb Williams isn't going to turn out like Zach Wilson? Or, you know, I don't know. You have a guy in Justin Fields who clearly has something. You haven't seen it in full yet, but you've seen the talent, you've seen the flashes. And you've seen him play good football at times. I don't know. It's a damn tough position to be in for Ryan Poles, I'll tell you what. I think you keep Fields, you trade down, or you draft Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. That way you have not only DJ Moore, but you have DJ Moore, Marvin Harrison Jr. You make the decision on whether or not you want to re-sign Darnell Mooney as your third receiver in the slot. You still have Cole Kmet locked up. And then after that, you build the line. You build the offensive line. You get yourself a legitimate left tackle, because I don't think Braxton Jones is it. I know he's working hard. He's, you know, he's doing the best he can. He's a fifth-round pick. If you really expected a fifth-round pick to be, you know, your left your blindside tackle. That's tough. That's a tough thing to put on a fifth round pick. He's not playing horrible, but I don't. I think he could do better. I think he could do better at that position. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. Just a little update. That Miami 45-15 final score against Washington was a scoregami. It is the 1,082nd unique final score in NFL history. That score has never happened. So that's pretty cool. We got scoregami today, ladies and gentlemen. So what else? I want to know from you guys. All right. I want to know from you, what would you do if you were Ryan Poles? You were in the same position that he was in. What would you do? Are you drafting a quarterback? Are you building around Justin Fields? Hit me up in the comments section on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube if you'd like. And let me know what you would do. Because it's it's going to be a hard decision for Ryan Poles. And his job may depend on how his decision turns out. We have some games really coming down to the wire here. And today's week 13 action. By the way, isn't it great having a football Sunday without the Bears? I mean, honestly, shout out to Nicole for the merch. We stinks, Zambrano, 2011. Until further notice, this represents not only the Chicago Cubs. I know it was a quote from Carlos Zambrano in 2011. But this shirt represents Chicago sports as a whole. All right. The Cubs, I mean, they're trending upwards. So I'm not really going to say they stinks. All right. The White Sox, we stinks. What? The Bears, we stinks. What? What? The Blackhawks, we stinks. What? The Bulls stink, ladies and gentlemen. So, I don't know if you guys have ever watched NFL Red Zone. But it might be time for you to give it a chance, because it's the best way to watch football. I'm catching all these games as they go down to the wire. Not missing a touchdown, not missing a single point. NFL Red Zone is the way to go, ladies and gentlemen. Plus, you'll get the great voice of Scott Hansen, you know, directing you through all these games. So currently we have Indianapolis and Tennessee in a tied 25-25 game. Denver's trying to come back on Houston with just 23 seconds to go. They're inside the 10. Russell Wilson trying to get in the end zone and take the lead. Here's the play, actually. And he's incomplete. So, football's great without the Bears. That's just what I'm saying. Let's move on, though. Better yet, let's get a drink of water before we do that. Water is the key, ladies and gentlemen, to staying healthy, flushing your system. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit of baseball here. The hot stove is heating up, especially on the north side of Chicago. The Cubs have a slew of opportunities to not only re-sign a few key pieces from last year, but to acquire some really, really big names for this upcoming season. There's a player in Japan who is coming to the majors. He's a starting pitcher. And I want him on the Cubs. Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Apparently his decision is down to three teams. I don't know if the Cubs are involved. And Russell Wilson gets picked off in the end zone. That is going to finish the ball game in Houston. They win 22-17. Anyway, apparently the Dodgers are in on the last three teams for Yamamoto sweepstakes. I don't see anybody else. Of course the Dodgers are in on it. Why wouldn't they be? It's a damn joke. It's a damn joke that the Dodgers are in on every hot free agent. I don't know if there should be a salary cap in baseball, but every big name player shouldn't have to expect every big name player that's, you know, a free agent to come to the Yankees or the Dodgers. I'm so tired of that. It is the same old story, same old song and dance. So, Mr. Yamamoto, please don't go to the Dodgers. Come home. Not to Japan, but to Chicago on the north side. The Cubs got to decide if they want to re-sign Cody Bellinger or if they want to try to re-sign Cody Bellinger or if they want to go with P. Crow Armstrong in center field. I don't know what kind of numbers Cody Bellinger is commanding these days. I'd like to have him back. He had an excellent year. But it's going to be tough to... Right now, I think the Cubs are focused on Shohei Ohtani. Now, Shohei Ohtani is 30 years old. Now, his contract is going to cost north of $500 million. But the problem with that is he's not going to be able to pitch until 2025. So what you're paying for is that dual threat of, you know, a home run hitter along with one of the better arms in the league, but you're not getting that in your first season having him. The question becomes, are you going to get that at all? Is he going to return to pitching as well as he did before his surgeries that he's having? It's a tough it's a tough look to make that signing, 550 plus mil, which is astronomical numbers. But to make that signing and for him to not be able to pitch, it's a little scary to me. I'm not saying I don't want him because Cubs haven't had a 40 home run hitter since Derek Lee in 2005. And Shohei Ohtani will get you into the 40 home run club, pitching or not. So I'm not saying I don't want him. Because I'll be glad to have him. I think it's worth the risk. I really do. There's also been trade rumors that the Cubs are in on Pete Alonso, first baseman from the New York Mets. I've also heard, I don't know if they've been in on him or not, but I've heard people saying that they want Juan Soto to be traded to the north side from the Padres. The Cubs have so many options. And they only missed the playoffs by, what was it? One game? Last season? So the Cubs aren't far off. I think they're contenders now. So you make a few key acquisitions. Also, they were close to signing, or not signing, making a trade for Rays starting pitcher Tyler Glasnow. Now, that'd be a good signing. Cubs need another arm. A few signings, a few trades, and this team is playoff ready, in my opinion. I don't think they're far off. Cubs are going to be big spenders. They're going to land somebody, whether it be Cody Bellinger in free agency, Yamamoto, Shohei Ohtani. Cubs are going to land somebody, whether it be a trade for Pete Alonso, Juan Soto, Tyler Glasnow. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens. Now, shifting gears onto the south side of town. It is the opposite. They are looking to unload. They're looking to... I don't know if they're going to go into a full-scale rebuild. But... That may be where it's trending. Yeah, I got a guy like... You got a guy like Dylan Cease, who is... His trade market's heating up. Never would have thought when the Cubs sent him over the south side and he became an ace starting pitcher that the White Sox would be trying to trade him. It's like Chris Sale all over again. Except Dylan Cease isn't a dick. Eloy Jimenez... Nobody apparently, according to their general manager, is untouchable. And that includes Luis Robert, which is wild to me. If they trade Luis Robert, I don't think they will. It would probably have to be in just an insane haul. If they trade Luis Robert, then it's a full-scale rebuild. There's no turning back. There's no denying it. It is a full-scale rebuild. On the south side. Again, I think the trade has to be really, really hot for you to trade Dylan Cease as well. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that happens here soon. The winter meetings, I believe, are this week. And usually a lot goes down during those. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. I feel bad for White Sox fans. I mean, I hate most of you. I don't hate your team. I hate most of you. But I do feel bad for you. Because you guys deserve a little better than that. Whether it be Jerry Reinsdorf selling the team, which, let's be honest, that's not going to happen. Or actually spending money to win ball games. I used to make fun of you guys for not filling up the stands at your home park, whatever you call it these days, Guaranteed Rate Field. Used to make fun of you guys. But now there's a really solid reason not to go. Because you're just buying into the dog shit product that they're putting out there. If you show up and you're putting asses in seats, they're thinking, why do we have to win? And that's exactly the same thing with the Bears. Why do we have to win? If we're selling out each game, if we're getting the merchandise sales, if we're getting the beer sales, because we know you guys... not just you guys, but Chicago fans, they like to drink. I feel bad for you guys. I really do. I think the Cubs, I think they're on the up and up. I think they're going to be contenders again for a couple of years. The window is opening. That's not just biased me speaking. I try to be as unbiased as possible on this show. Here's the deal. The White Sox made... How much did they pay the kid they got from... Kansas City, I believe, last year? I think that was their first, like, $100 million contract or something ever in, like, franchise history. Trying to pull up this guy... Oh well, they did sign. They did sign Paul DeWong, the shortstop. Andrew Benintendi, that's his name. Benintendi, what is his contract? Because I believe. Oh no, you know what? His contract's $75 million. That was the richest contract in White Sox history. So they've never made a $100 million signing. How are you gonna win ball games like that? I don't understand. And that's why I say we the stinks. Josh, my boy Josh, I don't know if you're watching this, but we stinks. We the stinks. So I don't know what happens here from here on out with the White Sox. I think a full-scale rebuild is coming. I know Sox fans don't want to hear that because, you know, this was supposed to be the winning window from the last rebuild. But it just hasn't happened. It just hasn't happened. So, what are you going to do, huh? Take a quick time out here and jump in with my friend Robert Barton in just a few minutes to talk a little bit of NHL hockey, Blackhawks hockey, and some professional wrestling. Survivor Series was just a couple weeks ago. We were at the show. So let's discuss that on the other side. Take a quick time out. We'll come back. We'll get Robert on, and we'll get her moving. Don't go anywhere. You're watching episode number 38, Second City Sam's Hot Takes, The Return Edition. Be right back. Welcome back, Second City Sam's Hot Takes, episode number 38, the return edition. We're going to shift some gears here. We're going to talk some Chicago Blackhawks hockey. And as I try to get Robert on, he needs to connect his mic before I can add him in, by the way. There he is. Let's get him in here. There he is, Robert. I don't know if you're going to put your camera on. Hello, hello. How are you, sir? How are you?
Fantastic. I just got off work.
Yeah, I bet you're feeling good now.
I'm feeling great now.
Hell yeah. So we're going to talk some Blackhawks hockey. I know you don't want to discuss what's going on in the game at the moment, but let's do it anyway.
That 4-0 absolute mollywhopping that's going on right now.
Yeah, not a good look, but the Hawks, nonetheless, they're a little more watchable than last year because of one man, and that man is Connor Bedard. So how do you feel about his progression through his first, I don't know, what are we up to? Two dozen games? Not even two dozen, but maybe...
We're like, what is this, their 22nd, 23rd game, something like that?
Yeah, yes.
I would definitely say I am very happy with his progression so far. Okay, so let's put it like this. His defense is, it's not the best yet. Also, by the way, Sam.
No, love it. Love the Danbury Trashers getup.
But in regards to Bedard, he's fantastic. Watching him progress more and more offensively every game is just a blast to watch. But like I was saying, his defense is what needs work still. He's getting better on the faceoff. You know, every game you can see it. Like I think the other day, yesterday, he won most of his faceoffs. I forget the exact number, but he won more than he lost, I'm pretty sure. But that his back checking is slow. His defensive positioning overall is not the best. He's made a. I'm not saying it's awful, because he's still, you know, there's been times where I'm like, oh, okay, good stick lift. Oh, okay, good poke check. Really shut him down there, but it needs to work. But the positives, his offense, 19 points in just over 20 games for, you know, the youngest player in the league right now on possibly the most abysmally trash team in the league right now. I mean, it says something.
It that, does.
You know, and he took it. And the more they surround him with these up-and-coming prospects, you know, Frank Nazar out of Michigan, Oliver Moore out of Minnesota, even Landon Slager is going to be like a good third-line, maybe fourth-line guy out of Notre Dame. And, you know, so on and so forth. Like, they just had Louis Crevier, another prospect, make his debut game today. He was a seventh-round pick. That's something right there. But the more they surround him with this younger talent that they're going to have coming up, the better he's just going to get, the more he's going to produce. He's already at almost a point per game now. It's going to be great watching his progression the next at least decade plus.
Absolutely, and I haven't seen every game. I've seen the highlights of every game, and you know every game that I've seen him, you know, score, it's usually pretty highlight reel shit. And I saw a pass that he made. They played yesterday. It was yesterday, right? Yeah, so he made a pass yesterday. They didn't score on it, but it was like a backhand cross ice pass or behind the back cross ice pass, and he just laid it right on the twig. Somehow it didn't go in the net, but you know he doesn't have as many assists as goals right now, but he can pass the puck too.
You know, and it's funny you say he doesn't have as many assists as he does goals. I forget who it was that interviewed him, that did this interview with him leading up to the season. I almost, it's not CHGO, it was someone else, but he was basically saying like, oh, you know, I don't really see myself as much of a goal scorer, this and that. Okay, well, what do you have to say about yourself now? Because you have 11 goals on the season, which is so good. And then combined with whatever assists are just gravy at this point, dude. Don't say you're not a goal scorer. You're a goal scorer.
Yeah, he actually just got his 9th assist on the Tyler Radish goal that got the Hawks off the schneid in today's game. So,
there's his 20th point on the season right there.
Right, yeah. So Connor Bedard, definitely fun to watch for the Blackhawks. Not a whole lot else fun to watch about this team. But what have you enjoyed besides Bedard about this abysmal hockey club?
Okay. One reason why the Hawks are so bad is because our defense is so young. So young. Like, we have our only three, like, veteran defensemen are Seth Jones, who I think is doing better than some people are giving him credit for this year. Is it worth the $9.5 million? I'm still going to say no.
That's where people are drawing the line, because he's not playing awful, but he's not playing up to a $9.5 million contract.
Exactly.
But go on.
Our other veteran defense, we have like four, but you know, two of them rotate most games. But Connor Murphy, second pairing right side defenseman, a good solid shutdown defenseman to have on a team. And then, you know, Nikita Zaitsev and Jared Tenorti are pretty much the other two. But then you've got four rookie defensemen that have pretty much been some in and out of the lineup. Two of them consistent in the lineup. So you've got Alex Vlasic, who I think in a few years could be one of the best shutdown defensemen in the game, in the league right now. He's so good.
Yeah, I thought he had a really good start to the season.
Right. He's showing more of an offensive side than I think most people expected from a shutdown defenseman. And then the obvious Kevin Korchinski has been so good this season. The debate of should he go back to the WHL, the whole time I'm thinking, no, there's nothing left for him to do there. All he's going to do is just go out there and make most other players in that league look stupid because he's that good as an offensive defenseman. And he's showing it in the NHL, but you know, the shutdown defense game will come over time for him. But then, you know, Kaiser, who just got sent down to Rockford, which is you know.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shocking move, but it's probably, like you said, it's probably needed.
At least not for the whole rest of the season.
No, he'll be back up.
You know, like 20, 30 games in Rockford, I don't think we'll kill him, you know.
So a little bit of news coming out before the game today is that Lucas Reichel was a healthy scratch in today's game. Do you think at some point he goes back down to Rockford? Because he has not been good at all this season so far.
I could absolutely see it. In fact, I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. I'm surprised it didn't happen after the first, like, somewhere around the 10 to 15 game mark, and they were realizing he's not really producing like he was at the end of last season. He was killing it at the end of last year. I was like, cool, he's going to carry that over. Nope. Hasn't done it.
No. Definitely hasn't.
One big reason he hasn't, though, is I think it was a mistake to start him at center. I know he was drafted as a centerman, but I think he's just more productive as a winger. I don't see him as a centerman. I mean, over time, maybe. Most rookies are not good at the faceoff dot,
right,
at the center position itself. But he's just really, really not good.
Yeah, and that's...
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that he's shown that he has skill. So it's not like he's a bad hockey player. It's just not it hasn't transitioned well to the National Hockey League for him. Right. I don't know. Hopefully it'll turn around. Like it took. Look at Philip Kurashev. It took him, what, this is his third or fourth year now, and he's finally coming into his own. He's becoming a point-per-game player for now at this point of the season anyway. But I was one of his biggest critics, and when you told me a few days ago that he's been a point-per-game player, I looked at the stats. I'm like, wow, I didn't even realize that he was playing up to the standards that he was.
And he's getting better. Like I've been liking him as Bedard's center on like a lot of their power plays, even the basic 5-on-5. There's plenty of times he's been Bedard's center, and he's winning more faceoffs overall than Bedard. And it's getting, you know, and him and Bedard have such good chemistry together so far.
Yeah, and
those two are clicking so well, and I'm loving seeing it.
It's good to see, and. Because one of the main negatives for the Hawks so far this year is that a guy that was supposed to be playing with Bedard and showing him the way, Taylor Hall, is out for the remainder of the season with a knee. How big of a loss is that, in your opinion? I mean, I know the Hawks aren't expected to win with him anyway, but. Maybe he was going to be like a trade deadline flip, and now at this point you're not going to be able to do that.
So maybe not. Okay, I can't even say not on ice. It's not a, you know, on ice it is actually a bigger impact than I was initially thinking, because, you know, he was producing almost every game he played. He would at least rack up a point. He bought some grit out there, you know, and he made Bedard look like $1 million in a few of those games they played together, you know, and not like the whole game, but like in spots, he was making the guard look good out there, and likewise, you know, vice versa, all that. But the bigger impact, I think, is to the locker room, because he was such a good presence for that locker room, a great veteran leader. And somebody who, like Bedard, knows the pressure of being a highly, highly touted first overall draft pick. So, you know, it was nice for Bedard to have someone to fully, fully relate to in that sense.
Yeah, especially after the whole Corey Perry thing, which I don't really want to get into too much on the show, but that was a whole thing that kind of, you know, made the Blackhawks the center of attention for all the wrong reasons once again. you put that behind you, you move on, and now the Hawks are sitting, after today's loss, they're sitting at 7-15, which is second to last in the National Hockey League. So most likely they're going to be getting a very good draft pick again this upcoming offseason, or during the season, isn't it, the draft? No, it's off. After, yeah, after. Yeah. I'm thinking of the MLB. So you're a guy who likes to look at prospects and whatnot. Who, if any, right now is the odds on favorite to be, you know, a top pick in next year's draft?
I'm almost certain this kid is playing in Boston University right now. But either way, whether it's Boston or not, but it's Macklin Celebrini. Now, this is one of those drafts where I haven't, at the moment, studied prospects like I normally do to this point. But he's the most highly touted prospect right now. He was on the Chicago Steel for a bit. He's playing on Boston University. I mean, I've watched highlights of him. He's really good. If the Hawks can end up with a 1-2 punch at center of Bedard and then Macklin Celebrini right behind him, sure. But whose kid is actually in this upcoming draft?
Who's that?
Jerome Iginla's son, Tage Iginla.
Wow, we're getting old, man.
I know. That's what I thought too. I'm alone. Oh, no.
What does he play?
I think he's a winger.
Okay.
Like his pop.
What's that?
Like his pops. He's a winger.
Oh yeah, Jerome Iginla was something special. If his son could be any even half of what he was, he'll have a long career in the National Hockey League.
Oh,
all right. Well, yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to our final segment, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's move on to some pro wrestling. Survivor Series has passed. We were there. How did you enjoy the show?
I'm going to dive into my thoughts on the non-War Games matches first. We'll get into the good stuff in a bit. So our three non-War Games matches were Miz Gunther, we had Rhea versus Zoe, and we had Santos versus Dragon Lee. There wasn't a bad match out of the bunch, but I will say Santos and Dragon Lee did not get anywhere near enough time.
No.
Rhea and Zoe was good. Definitely like a good stiff match at times. A little quirky here and there, but, you know, still a good enough match. And, you know, Zoe's just getting better and better, which is so good to see because in her first, like, little bit in WWE, very injury prone.
Yes.
And, you know, that was sad because she never stopped showing that potential that she's now really starting to hit more and more. And Rhea Ripley is Rhea Ripley. I mean, she's elite. She's like franchise level in that company right now.
Yeah.
You know, the only woman that's matching her natural star power at this moment is Becky Lynch, which is why I think those two should go one-on-one at WrestleMania. Women's
title match. I'm not against it at all.
And then to go into Miz Gunther, you guys all know me. You and every other guy in the group that watches wrestling with us know I'm a huge Gunther mark. I will die on the hill that he is right now the best big man wrestler in the world and could go down as one of, if not the best of all time in the big man category.
You and Jim Cornette, never thought you guys would have anything in common.
Yeah. our view on Gunther, he is... Like I said, I just said it about Rhea Ripley. That man is franchise level no matter where he goes. Any company he goes to, he'd be a top guy. I think until a certain so-and-so came back, which we'll get into that, Gunther was my pick, and I would still not mind it one bit if he was one to beat Seth Rollins for the world title at WrestleMania. Do I think it's going to happen now? Come on. it's not happening now. Now that so-and-so is back, I see Gunther more than likely walking into Mania as the Intercontinental Champion again.
I'm not against it because his reign hasn't been boring at all. It's, you know, he's gotten so much better on the mic too. I think he's actually a lot of fun on the mic. He's straight to the point. He almost looks down on his opponents, and I like that. He should, he's beaten them all, and I don't know who you have beat him at this point, but what's that?
The match with Miz was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really good 12-minute match there.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. The guy is second to none. He's really, really good. And we got a comment here on YouTube. I'm still trying to figure out this whole StreamYard thing. So my wife has kind of been telling me that I'm getting comments. I don't know how to check the comments on YouTube yet while still doing the stream. So I've noticed that there were comments from Josh. Hi, what's up, Josh? Hope you're doing well, brother. Kevin Hett, people want to hear your Rumble winner predictions. Well, we're going to get to that because we were kind of trending towards that. Joe Cerna checking in saying Rhea versus Cargill WrestleMania.
No. Jade's going to be a star. Jade's going to win a title at WrestleMania 41 if she's not champion walking into that. She'll probably win a title before it, but not at Mania 40.
Okay.
Not yet. But I do see why Joe would think that.
No, I mean, like you said, she's definitely going to be a star. I don't want her going straight to the main roster. I think she should have a run in NXT first.
Yes and no. Yes, because she desperately needs the in-ring work.
Yes.
No, because you put her on the main roster, you can work for at least, you know, a few months around the in-ring work part of it. But, like, her natural star power is just, it's huge. I mean, it's main roster huge. If you put her in NXT, it can't be for long. Just long enough for her to get that in-ring season.
Okay. I'm not against her going to the main roster first. I just feel like she for me, because you know how I felt about her on AEW. I didn't enjoy any. Yeah. So I just think she could use the in-ring work. She can go in there, hone her craft, and then come up to the main roster and be the star that I think she can be.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's just the way I see it.
You want my opinion on what she should do at Mania 40? No title match, but she should face an established name on the roster that when she wins that match, people are like, oh, damn, that's a good first big win for Jade Cargill. Somebody like Asuka would be a good choice. Asuka can eat that loss. Like, it won't affect her one bit, and she... You know, she's an established name in the company, a multi-time women's champion. She won the Royal Rumble. She was Miss Money in the Bank. You know, she's an established enough name. Cargill wins that match. Everyone's like, oh, wow, Cargill beat Asuka in her first match? You know, her first, like, big match? Wow. Something. But that's my view on what she should do at Mania.
My bad.
But,
No, still trying to figure this crap out.
What were your thoughts on the 3 non-War Games matches at Survivor Series?
Yeah, they were fine. We went to the SmackDown the night before, and I thought that made me feel like I never need to go to another weekly show, whether it be SmackDown or Raw again. And so I was pretty skeptical heading into Survivor Series. I wasn't sure if it was going to be fun to be there live, but the three matches blew me away. I thought they were good. They kept me entertained through it all. And then as we were about to get to the War Games matches, just they wowed me. It was awesome.
Yeah. Our buddy Manny was saying in our wrestling group chat that he he didn't think the women's match was that good because he was watching it on TV. He was noticing a lot more like of the slip ups, and apparently we were. But I, being there live, watching the match, I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I did too. I thought there was nothing wrong with it.
I'll never get tired of watching Io Sky jump off of a jump off the top of a cage with a garbage can covering top level stuff right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the baby faces got the win. I thought it was going to go the other way, but it's a good way to kind of see where Damage Control's going at this point. It seems like Bayley's on the way out. Which I think is a good...
I want to talk about Kairi Sane coming back. I
mean, yeah.
It's been set in stone for like months at this point, but it was... so cool to have Kairi Sane come back. He joined Damage Control right off the bat. And still, you know, as fine as ever. So I'm sure, and in the ring, at War Games, she looked, you know, good enough in the ring for her first match back being a War Games match. Was it her? It was her first match since coming back, right?
I
don't think she's had a weekly TV match.
I believe so.
Okay, if she's had a weekly TV match, and anyone else who's watching would know, I'd add, I don't watch weekly WWE as much anymore. I try to, but they don't have much that keeps me compelled for the weekly stuff. Like we were saying, we don't need to go to another weekly show anytime soon.
Yeah, it just, I don't know what it was, SmackDown, I mean, I was already pissed off because they moved our seats without even, like, letting us know, but I just there was nothing about the SmackDown that like kept me interested, and I don't know if that's just a result of me, you know, I haven't been watching all of the weekly shows for about the past, you know, 4 or 5 months or whatever. I've been catching the highlights and then, you know, watching the premium live events that they call them now. maybe it was just a Yeah, I know. Maybe it was just a result of me not being up to date with the product, but I just didn't enjoy myself at that SmackDown at all.
You could say that it's, you know, we didn't enjoy it so much because we haven't been keeping up with the weekly product as much, but at the same time, that's not entirely on us for not enjoying that show. They didn't put really any effort into putting stuff out there that was compelling, that was making us go like, oh my god, Survivor Series is tomorrow. I'm already on the edge of my seat waiting for it. There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
Yeah, but getting to the men's War Game match, talk about it. What were your thoughts before we get to the obvious?
It was such good stuff there. I want to talk about one spot in particular where Randy Orton was supposed to come out, and out came Rhea Ripley. We were all just like, oh my god, no way. Are they actually going to do... I was thinking to myself, was I right? Is Damian Priest going to cash in the middle of War Games? But in the back of my head, I was like, no, you dummy. He's not going to cash in the middle of War Games. Randy Orton's going to come out. Exactly what happened, you know. So the more conscientious and logically thinking side of me took over at the end.
Yeah.
But the match was so good. So good. Orton just coming back doing his RKOs, doing his usual stick. Okay, it's exactly what needed to be done. Like every War Games match, a little clunky here and there. Bit of a clusterfuck. But what?
Oh, yeah, right.
It's War Games. You have 8 dudes in the ring surrounded by a cage. I'm sorry, 8 dudes in 2 rings surrounded by a cage. And just it's hard to keep the flow of a match like that smooth and consistent. But they did a great job. Everyone involved did. There was not a single bad performance in that match.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I loved the thing with Andy Rorton. Wow. I love the thing.
I thought you were going to say Andy Richter for a second. I was like, he wasn't
there. No, I love the thing with Randy Orton. Like getting ready to look like he was going to RKO Jey Uso, and then telling him like, "Hey, I remember what you did." Like, so that I thought that was really good long term storytelling. And then, you know, again, the babyfaces get the win, I'm not sure I was ready for that either, but what happened afterward is what shocked not only you and I, because we were yelling at people for chanting that, but it shocked the entire world. So what did you think? Because I know CM Punk is one of your favorites, one of my friend Josh's favorites, and a lot of favorites with, you know, these parts. We're from the Chicagoland area, so there's a lot of fans of CM Punk.
So CM Punk will never not be in one of my all-time favorite wrestlers list. You know, okay, the last year or so, it's been hard to be a CM Punk fan. All this controversy, which not entirely his fault. Absolutely not entirely his fault. Could he have handled things in a better way than he did? Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, condescending the company and the boss that he works for in a press conference, bad move. Because you can literally see Tony Khan at the All Out 22 press conference last year, just looking at him like, really, dude? Like, okay, that's cool. That's fine. But so at the same time, he gets hurt, and he comes back, and the whole thing with Jack Perry happens, and, you know, and then it just, he ends up leaving AEW. And then, you know, so my feelings for the last year or so are mixed. But I'm happy to see him back. Like I said, when he showed up, it's the happiest I've ever been to be wrong about something wrestling related.
Yeah, and I'm not. You know me. I've never been a big CM Punk fan. But even I pop. I didn't pop. My jaw just dropped.
Neither of us popped. We both jaw dropped, looking at each other like,
these motherfuckers actually did it.
No, and then the whole thing, I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, so we just look like a bunch of jackasses for telling people, hey, shut up, he's not coming back. Yeah, no, he came back.
Oh.
That's up real fast.
So now you look forward, and guess what? Now the Royal Rumble's next month, and he's a favorite.
Oh, yeah. Huge favorite, because I think, and our buddy Scott said it too, but it was my first thought. One thing in his contract is a guaranteed WrestleMania main event. Doesn't matter if it's night one or night two. Punk is main eventing. I'm going to say night one of WrestleMania this year.
I disagree. I think it may happen, but I don't think Triple H is going to put any guarantees in any contracts.
Understand. Yeah. Okay.
But I do think he wins the Rumble. Kevin, to answer your question, I think he wins the Rumble. I think he faces Seth Rollins. I think the writing has already been, you know, on the table since the night CM Punk returned. The video of Seth Rollins comes out flicking off CM Punk, you know, calling him all kinds of names. And it's got to be a work, because they already put it on TV on Raw the next 2 days later. So you got to say that maybe... I know Cody was the first to enter the Rumble, but I think CM Punk goes in there next month and wins the damn thing.
I agree. Punk is, as of right now, my pick to win the Rumble. There was a... Ever since Mania 39, the abysmal ending of that show, I still stick by that. Abysmal.
It was the right move, Rob.
Cody, well, we can talk about that's a debate for another time. My initial thought was, is Cody going to win back-to-back Rumbles, which wouldn't be the first one that's done it. But I still think it's a minor possibility. He's still one of the favorites to win the Rumble, but he's not the favorite anymore.
No,
I don't think he was the favorite before Punk came back. In my opinion, the favorite was Gunther.
I think I would agree with you, only because I think Cody Rhodes is going to win the Elimination Chamber, and that's how he faces Roman Reigns. Because it's gotta be a rematch, right? There's got to be.
Oh, yeah. No, if Cody is not ending Mania Night 2 as the WWE Champion, that's a problem. That's a problem, in my opinion, because it... Like I said, it should have happened this year, but I digress.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the Bloodline story was still so hot at that time that I think the right move was made. But at this point, in my opinion, I feel like it's kind of run its course. It hasn't been as interesting for me personally. And I know that's subjective to anyone. Maybe some people are still enjoying it. I don't know, but I haven't. It hasn't kept me watching SmackDown. Reigns is barely there. I know that's part of his contract and everything. But I'm ready for it to end. I think it's going to end at WrestleMania with Cody Rhodes being the WWE champion.
If all of us end up watching that show together or even going to it, you guys are going to see me jump out of my skin because I've been a Cody Rhodes fan since his WWE debut, and. It's a long time coming for him to be the WWE champion.
Yeah, he's definitely deserving. He's a guy who represents the company well. Especially coming from AEW, nobody was really sure how it was going to be. But he's been nothing but a company guy ever since he's gotten back.
The company, WWE right now, I would say, has five or so franchise-level people. Okay. I've already said two of them, Gunther and Rhea Ripley. Cody Rhodes is another one of them. As of right now, still, Roman Reigns is another one. Can't say he's not. You're silly if you do.
Yep.
And right now, I think the fifth one would be, you could flip-flop either Becky Lynch or Seth Rollins, or even say both and say there's six franchise-level players, because both of them could be considered that.
You could throw CM Punk in there now, too.
I won't until I feel more certain that he's going to actually stick around.
You hear that, Phil? Behave.
Once I'm sure of that, then absolutely punch a franchise-level player.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Before we get out of here, is there anything from AEW that you've really been enjoying? Because I watched my first Dynamite in multiple months the other night. I didn't think it was bad. Few fun matches in there. So what is your overall thought on the product? I know they've been having some attendance problems, ratings problems, but what do you think?
Notice how people haven't been posting pictures every single week of their horrid attendance, which, okay, yeah, I can't even do quotation marks because it was bad. But I think that's because they're not filling arenas, but they're getting some better attendance. I think as more of this CM Punk shit passes, more people are going to start, and they see the good work that they're doing, because they are doing really good work on TV for their overall product and all that. Once people start getting more of a glimpse of that, their attendance will start coming back up and all that.
Yeah, because go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think they know their, what's the word I'm looking for? They know what their,
identity.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but they know who the people is that watch the product, and I think that they've accepted at this point that they're just a different form of professional wrestling, like an alternative to WWE. I don't know if they think they're competition at this point, because they're not, but I think if they're going to just stick to what they are, and keep that as their identity and be fine with what they bring in and what they, what they have. I think that's okay. If that's what they want to be, then that's what they want to be, in my opinion.
So I'll say right now they have a fantastic set of champions right now. MJF being their world champion. Babyface MJF, I can do without. I'll totally admit that right now. But the man is still a top tier mic worker, in-ring worker. He, for AEW, a franchise-level guy, there's a reason he's their world champion, and he's their longest-reigning world champion now. I think he's already re-signed, but they're still going to play the bidding war of 2024 story out, but yeah. I think he's re-signed already. Christian Cage being their TNT champion, that man is 50 years old and is doing possibly the best work of his career. The whole ripping on people for having dead dads shtick, I didn't think would catch on so well, but I haven't heard anybody say anything negative about him or the gimmick. and there's a reason for it, because he's killing it. And look at his in-ring work, 50 years old. Dude's putting on killer matches whenever he's out there.
Is he really? Yeah, I haven't seen any of his matches. I know he's doing good work. Everybody seems to be really enjoying it. I enjoy the turtlenecks personally, but I'm happy for Christian. I know I always give you a hard time because you're one of his biggest fans, but I enjoy Christian. I've always enjoyed his work. And I'm happy he's doing good work in AEW because he does deserve it.
Let's see, they're international champion. I know you're not a big Orange Cassidy fan, but throughout this whole past year, the man has done nothing but kill it in every aspect and everything he has done. He has killed it.
Can't take him seriously.
His matches are killer. His mic work has been so good for somebody that has the gimmick of that dude. Killer mic work. Dude has been fantastic and has proven to be one of AEW's top guys. Tony Storm, timeless Tony Storm, being the women's champion, lover.
Can't say anything about that.
Julia Hart being the TBS champion. Love me some Julia Hart. You want to talk about most improved wrestler of the year? Look, it doesn't matter what company you want to look at. If you don't have her in your top five, at least, you ain't paying attention to Julia Hart then, because she is so good. This gimmick has done wonders for her. Let's see. The Trios champs, I think, is still the... Is it the Acclaim? No. Yes, I actually think it is still the
Acclaim. It is. It's the Acclaim.
I mean, their overall tag division is... It does still... need work. Like Big Bill and Ricky Starks being the tag champions, I think is actually, it's so far so good. Fun as a tag team. They had a killer four-way ladder match at their most recent show. Great stuff from those guys.
I'm surprised Ricky Starks isn't in WWE yet.
Contract stuff. I think his contract just hasn't expired yet.
I was going to say, I don't know how long his contract goes, but...
I think he's up next year, so I could absolutely see him joining WWE next year.
I actually thought he was much younger than he is. I didn't know he was 33. So I don't know how long he's been doing it, but I mean, 33 isn't necessarily old in wrestling years, so we'll have to wait and see. That's true. That's true. Christian is 50.
But so they have some good stories going on too with the whole Devil and MJF thing. If they play that out right, that story could end so well. Like my deep hope is that Adam Cole's injury has just been fake this whole time, and he's been the devil just screwing with MJF, faking this injury. It's him as the devil, and then it's Roddy and the Kingdom as the cronies.
Is that what your pick is for the devil?
I don't know if I have a necessarily solidified, hey, this is who it is pick, but that's what I really want it to be. If it's Adam Cole, that story, I'm sorry, aside from the bloodline, there's no story that would top it within the last few years.
Yeah, for sure.
I know bold opinion, but that's my thing.
Hey man, this is hot takes. This is why we're here. So I'm really happy you were here, man. I've enjoyed this. I always enjoy talking hockey and wrestling with you, and we're gonna wrap it up here on episode 38 of Second City Sam's Hot Takes, the return. I don't know if I'll be doing it every Sunday or someday during the week, but it will be every week. You'll see Robert on here a lot. You may see some more guests along the way. Robert, where can the people follow you, my man?
So I changed my. I don't want to call it X, but I'll call it X. Here's my X handle from Captain Hawk 19 to Rob, not Bob, 095. The R, the N, and the B are capitalized.
There you go. And you can follow me on all platforms at Second City Sam. Again, I'd like to thank you all for watching. And for those of you who are listening to the audio version, thank you as well. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify and YouTube. Share the show on Twitter and Facebook if you can. And once again, thank you for listening. I have been Second City Sam, and this has been episode 38 of Second City Sam's Hot Takes. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
And this one's for you, Sam.
Oh, I just got iced on camera. Do it, Rob! If I had one, I'd do it back on you. Take care, people. That is a good one right there.
See you around, bitch.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Bye. Have a beautiful time.
Many waddled away, waddle, waddle. Many waddled away, waddle, waddle. Many waddled away, waddle, waddle.